Whoop whoop. That's the sound of Da Police. Police Academy 4, that is.
You're a pleasure to work with, sir.
Why, thank you, Tom. I've been quite excited about cracking that gag out since the last time we recorded.
It's good that we're learning. The more we go along, we're just getting better and better.
That's the thing. I'm always trying to be at the top of my gag game, you know?
Yeah, just like Police Academy films.
Because what I did was I noticed that both of those things have the word police in them.
Nice. Okay, I'm getting it. That's like the kind of snazzy writing that would probably have landed you a role as a writer on Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Citizens on Patrol, you say?
That is the name of the film that we are here to watch on the Bitter End podcast with me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan.
We've done this very smoothly. Yes, folks, we are here digging ourselves even deeper into the quagmire that is Police Academy, the franchise. This is the fourth movie. Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol from 1987.
Is that a year after the last one?
It is a year after the last one. Well spotted, sir.
It's almost as if it's really easy to just whack these scripts out.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I was saying that you probably would have worked very well as a writer.
I can. You got to have goals in life, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm working my way up.
I really hope you can write Police Academy 8.
Well, Police Academy 4 looks like it was kind of a bit of a left field one. I don't know. We watched the trailer, guys, and the trailer itself mainly seems to be about a golf ball.
Yeah.
You got Commandant Lasard hits a golf ball, it bounces all around on the Warner Brothers sign, and then they go, it's Police Academy, and then he cuts to Lasard with his golf swing going, 4!
Yeah. Is that going to be the best gag in this film? Because, I mean, other than, like, yeah, there's a golf ball in it. There's a golf. It's the one with the golf ball. That's what, like, how it's referred to in, like, Police Academy circles. Because just watching this, I was like, I don't fucking know, man. There's just, like, they kind of, like, the hint at the plot is that they say the title of the film, but you still don't really know. They're just training more recruits.
Yeah, there's
they're
a bit
just
of
training more recruits.
Gutenberg is like going into the neighborhood and trying to teach people to do neighborhood watch from the looks of it. But that bit is like, it's dealt with very, very quickly. And then we just get trailer voice guy going, all of the gang are here. Hightower, Zed, Sweet Chuck, Mahoney, Jones, Hooks, this new one that you haven't seen before, Tackleberry, Lasard, Harris. Harris is weird, mate.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm excited that Harris is back. Harris is back. Mauser seems to be out.
Mm. No sign of Spackler Fackler or Mrs. Spackler Fackler so far in the trailer. Doesn't mean they're not in it.
There's no sign of Mrs. Tackleberry, although the Tackleberry's brother-in-law, who keeps on punching his dad in the face and getting punched by his dad in the face, he's still in there. That's great. That's fucking hilarious. Yeah. We've got...
Seems like we get Callahan, the kind of the tough lady cop.
Yes.
Isn't it? Though she doesn't get given a shout out in the trailer. Not a fan favourite, apparently.
They just give shout outs to all the male characters. Yeah. I don't think Hooks gets a shout out. I don't think I even saw Hooks in the trailer.
I definitely spotted her. I think I just maybe did my own little, yo, Hooks, shout out.
Yeah, Callahan's in there doing a throwback to the first film where she's training some guys and just being like, now who wants to try this on me? And everyone obviously goes like, me, because I want a copper feel, because women. But it's a joke.
But they know the news of her like motorboating obsession is like out, obviously.
Mm.
And that's clearly.
And she was in a swimming pool. So she's now almost like she's more motorboat than human.
Yeah, she's going to get the operation done and have an outboard motor installed.
Yeah, she's like, I identify as boat now.
Good for her.
Yeah.
More power to her.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that stood out to me from the trailer, besides the golf ball, besides the gang, besides potentially this one weird new character, I think this is the first one where I really feel like I've not seen it.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Because I'm definitely a bit blurry on a lot of them. I thought I'd maybe only seen the first one. Turns out I had actually seen all three.
Okay.
But in my head, I just blurred that all together into one film because why wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah, even from watching this trailer, I was kind of thinking like, have I seen all of this before?
I don't think I have. Mm. So this is going to be interesting to me.
And I also have a feeling that this could be Gutenberger's last stand.
the final Goots down.
It could be. I know that he's going to leave the franchise at some point because he has better things to do, I guess. I mean, I guess three men and a baby.
I suppose.
When that call happens, you answer.
Cocoon?
Was he in Cocoon?
Yeah, he was in Cocoon. Okay.
Anyway, so this could be our last hurrah with
We're going to have to say Guten Tag to Gutenberg.
Oh, man.
I said good day to you. I said good day!
Fucking hell, we really need to get you rebooting this franchise with writing like that. So we should go and wave goodbye to Mr. Gutenberger. But before we do, Todd, you are charged with one count of having to play the IMDb guessing game.
Guilty as charged, Tom.
Okay, so Police Academy 3, Back in Training from 1986, that got a 5.2.
And I didn't love that one so much.
No. Now, so judged on what you know about the ways of the world and what you saw in that trailer, what do you reckon that this one gets rated on IMDb?
That was a 5.2, was it?
It was a 5.2. I think had 1 year to turn this round.
I think we're going to get a complete drop of a whole point. 4.2.
Ooh, it's not as bad as all that.
Oh.
It is a drop because it's obviously going to be. It's 4.8.
Oh.
So it's not too bad, but this franchise is just, they've left the handbrake off and they are slowly trundling down the hill.
I mean, it's, but once you get below a five, it's very, very difficult for a franchise to get back up over five again, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't see that happening now.
No, especially, you know, with Goots leaving. Like, who's going to be running the show without Gutenberg?
Please be Hooks. Please be Hooks. Please
yeah.
Be Hooks.
Well, you keep on dreaming, buddy. They didn't even say her name in the trailer for this one. I don't think they're suddenly going to make her the, like, lead protagonist.
She's got one line, damn it, and it's freeze dirtbags.
If the next film is called Police Academy 5, freeze dirtbags, colon, Hooks big day out, then we're going to be fine.
Fuck it. Shall we go give it a go?
Yeah, mate.
That is some funky shit.
The bass work on that is insane.
I just want to hear it again.
Have you heard the word out on the street? There's a new kind of heat that's walking the beat. Citizens on patrol.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. That is so satisfying.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that we haven't had like a film title song so far in this series, but I'm fucking glad that showed up. So we just watched the film. That is how the film opens.
Yeah, you've got Mahoney and you've got Michael Winslow cruising down the street in their cop car.
In Nowhere's Town, USA, Canada. Yeah. At night, so it opens with the classic kind of like city skyline at night, and then just like that heavy boom, boom, boom,
boom. Citizens on patrol,
and then it's all downhill from there.
I disagree with you, buddy.
Actually, no.
This, although this is one of the high points of the movie, there's a couple of others that I really enjoyed as well.
Yeah,
this film was mad. I enjoyed it, and I think I know why. I think for me, there's a real feeling that the characters are bedded in by this point. Four movies in, I know who they all are. I get how they work. I get their jokes. And there's a real feeling of some of them saying goodbye. Like, we know for a fact that Mahoney doesn't come back after this. I feel like maybe we're not going to see Bobcat Goldthwait or
maybe not.
Sweet Chuck after this. I'm not so sure.
We get a nice little arc for Bobcat as well.
Yeah.
Like, so,
spoiler alert.
He finds love.
Yeah.
He finds love.
But then I also, so there's this feeling of like returning to old friends, but also we're saying goodbye. You know, at the same time.
Yeah.
And admittedly, they do a lot of the gags they've done in the previous films.
Oh, yeah.
But they've had three other times to practice them. And those were just dress rehearsals. And then now they do them again. And this time, for example, with the Blue Oyster Bar scene, I, for my sins, actually laughed at it.
Okay, yeah. So, spoilers again, the Blue Oyster gay bar is 4 for 4. And it's there. And we were watching it, and like it's the same thing where like they go in by accident and then can't leave because they have to do ballroom dancing with a load of like of gay dudes in leather gear. And it was kind of like, I don't know, I mean, I still don't think it's a funny joke, but I now find it like that maybe it's getting funny because they just keep on doing it. And it's the relentlessness yeah. of this gag that doesn't really work, that it's now kind of in a dark and twisted way starting to become funny.
Yeah, things move in cycles. If you keep making the bad joke, eventually there will reach a point where people will just start to laugh out of nervousness. Then it will get yes. scary again. Then it will get funny again.
That's 100% what is happening to us with this. Yeah, I agree that this was... I don't know if I liked it more than the first one, but I think I probably chuckled more in this one than I had in two or three, and I found it a bit less tedious. There were some tedious moments, obviously.
Obvs.
But, yeah, I mean, so let's dive in. So what's going on? Mahoney and Jones are in the car listening to the awesome theme song to this film, Citizens on Patrol. Citizens on Patrol! And it's just a weird bit of serendipity that they're listening to that song and then they show up at Lassard's office for a meeting with all the rest of the gang just as Lassard is about to unveil his plan for the Citizens on Patrol scheme.
Citizens on Patrol, also known as COP or COP for short.
See what they did there. And it's like, and they're like, so it's like community what? So
it's like,
yeah, it's like Neighborhood Watch. And he's like, oh... It's like Neighborhood Watch, but much, much more. Because Lassard has lost his fucking mind in
he's
this.
He's gone nuts. He just doesn't know what's going on. And he's got this dreamy look in his eyes. And it's all about how he wants to repair the rift between the police and the regular people. So he basically wants to give normal citizens full police training, more or less, so that they can then go out and train others and they can go out and train others and etc.
Yeah, it's basically like the plot is like, so it's like the first film, but they don't get quite all the way there. Like in the first one was like, let's open it up so that anyone can become a policeman. I assume we're still living in the world where anyone can become a policeman, but they're like, how about this? Let's let anyone become a policeman almost.
Yeah.
They just don't get...
You have to still do a proper job at the same time.
Yeah.
Not that being a policeman isn't a proper job, but you know what I mean.
But yeah, like so like you go and do your job as a greengrocer, but then you're also kind of like keeping an eye on the community, which is kind of...
Sounds like a gyp to me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But like there were some moments of like this, like, oh, Lassard has lost his mind. But also some of that poignancy that you spotted in the first film where he's like, what's the worst part about like about police work? And they're like, oh, the uniform or like having to do paperwork and stuff. And then he's just like, why, I thought it was not being able to solve every crime and protect every person. And you suddenly get a little glimpse and it's like, oh... He means well, but his mind is dissolving at a rate of knots. Like, that's why he's got such an affinity with goldfish.
Yeah, he's gone over the rainbow, hasn't he? Interesting at that point where Callahan's answer for the worst part about police work, Callahan is the tough blonde lady trainer, by the way. Her answer is, she doesn't like the separate genders for locker rooms. She just wants them all to have one big locker room.
Yeah.
With a special motorboating chamber.
Yeah, special motorboating chamber. And just like she just wants to be like checking out some dongs. I don't know.
More power to her.
Go, you go, girl. Tackleberry's as big as is not being able to carry grenades.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, so like my question about that I had about Tackleberry in this one. It's
okay,
like,
hit me.
Because one of the citizens on patrol is this like tough old lady who is like old lady Tackleberry. She's like really into guns and military shit. And he goes round to her like apartment or whatever. And it's all painted in camouflage. And he's like, oh, I really like the way you decorate. It's like, why didn't he just join the fucking army?
Maybe he's got flat feet.
Yeah, or... Like, the reason he didn't get to join the police beforehand is he was too insane. And the army has still got some sense of standards. And the police are just like, fuck it, let them all in. Like, yeah, you're a maniac, we'll have you.
Meanwhile, we cut back to bloody Harris.
Harris is back. Mauser no more.
Mauser no more. So just to recap, villain in the first film was Harris. Then we had two movies of Mauser. Now we're back to Harris. And he doesn't like the sound of the Citizens on Patrol scheme because he thinks it's going to put cops out of a job.
Yes. Yeah.
So he wants to bring it down. What a surprise. Although Lassard has to go to the big international police conference in England. Just in England.
He'll be away for 2 weeks.
So he leaves Harris in charge of his baby, his all-important baby Citizens on Patrol program, not knowing that Harris is going to try and bring it down from the inside.
Yeah, and then...
Stakes!
And then thus ensues much capering, really. There's like this whole bit of exposition between Harris and Proctor, who was Mauser's like right-hand man. Nothing is explained about where Mauser has gone and why like Proctor is now working for Harris. It just happens. And they have this scene, this whole scene where he's like, it's laying out the stakes of the film. And they clearly realize, fuck, we've done a whole scene that doesn't have a joke in it. Like, this is all exposition. This won't stand. So they suddenly get, like, Proctor to go over to, like, one of those little desk toys.
Newton's Balls, I think it's called.
Yeah, Newton's... And, like, he, like, cracks the balls.
They clack into each other and do that thing in yuppie offices in the 80s.
Yeah, and Harris does not like that, and he just grabs it, and he says, "Don't you ever touch my balls without asking." Everyone stops and looks awkwardly, and we're like... Fucking hell, that was... Like, it was literally just like they realised that they did not have a gag for that scene and they just bunged this really, like, dodgy balls gag on at the end.
Yeah, I mean, some might argue that they still ended up without a gag for that scene, Tom, but...
Very, very arguable.
What else do we get? We get a really welcome reappearance, very briefly, from Mrs. Tackleberry.
Mrs. Tackleberry!
That's not his mum, that is his wife.
Yeah.
We get a family dinner at her parents' house, and her dad, Tackleberry's father-in-law, he wants to join the Citizens on Patrol program. They're all having dinner, and it's around here. They're the tough family that just like punch each other and get in fights and stuff, and they do it in a good-hearted way, supposedly. But No, the dad is just an abusive bully. He's just walking around punching his children and slapping his wife, and they're all putting on like a brave face. He slaps her on the ass.
Oh, okay,
pretty
right.
Pretty hard.
Oh, okay. He's got this like rivalry with the son, who is also a cop, and like they have this big punching match because he's like, "Hey, you don't think I'm fast enough? I could be a citizen on patrol." And he's like, "Dad, there's already like three of us in the family that are cops, like favoritism." All this back and forth, which leads to nothing because you never see younger, like the son again, and the dad never joins Citizens on Patrol. It was nice to have Mrs. Tackleberry back, but she just like observes the whole thing and is just kind of like, "Ugh.
Yeah.
This is a bit weird." But it's just so weird that like that whole conversation leads to nothing. None of those characters appear again. Like they have like set up for like a potential kind of like, you know, like the dad working at the police academy with his son.
Yeah.
And like the rivalry. There's like, yeah, they could have done loads of that. No.
Well, because they've got many characters.
They've got too many. They forget about it.
They've even introduced a new one, one of the new recruits who seems to be Hightower's nephew, something like that. He rocks up and we saw him briefly in the trailer.
His name's House.
His name is House, not the crime-solving detective guy, Hugh Laurie character. No, no.
I don't think Hugh Laurie solves any crimes.
I've never seen the show. Doesn't he murders or something?
No, he just makes people better again, but is a dick while he does it.
Isn't that just being a doctor, but with more being a dick?
Yeah, basically. That's essentially it.
Okay.
One of the most successful programs ever.
Good for him. You know, boy done good. This house is, I think he's called House because he's built like a brick shit house. He's
a big old boy.
Big lad. And he's Hightower doesn't even remember who he is. And he's like, "Yeah, you used to bounce me on your knee when I was a tiny baby." It's like, how does House know that? Can he remember being a baby?
Yeah. And then House does very little. Doesn't do an awful lot. Then we get, oh my God, people. So we get another like set of characters, new characters that get introduced that are going to eventually become citizens on patrol. We've got some skateboarding kids hanging out by the mall, and like the cops are like, hey, stop skateboarding. And they're like, we're not skateboarding, officer. This is carrying a skateboard. This isn't right. This isn't skating. And then the cops go away and they go,
this is skateboarding.
And who is this plucky young man who is about to ride his skateboard, but fucking David Spade?
Oh, this is such a highlight. Tom, in case any of the listeners are unfamiliar with who David Spade is by name, I'm sure they'd recognise his face. What is some of his big roles?
So he was like a comedy partner with the late Chris Farley. He was in like was in Tommy Boy and did a load of like Saturday Night Live stuff. He's been in the Adam Sandler vehicle Grown Ups 1 and 2. Loads of sitcoms.
He was Joe Dirt.
And like this is him in his first film role. Very unconvincingly playing, like, you know, like a really... If you've seen David Spade, he's not a skateboarder. But
you know who stands in for him as a skateboarder?
Tony Hawk does, is like... And, like, there's just this... Okay, this is the bit in the film. Not just David Spade, but everyone involved in this section deserves a Medal of Honor for this. Like, the people who... chose the wardrobe because it is just shit.
Like bright pink neon shirt and like green neon glasses.
It's so not edgy, but trying to be edgy in a late 80s way. Just David Spade's in it. You've got Tony Hawk doing all this like slow motion skateboarding. There's a lot of slow motion in this film, and it's just like this amazing scene of like the most radical 80s skating around a shopping mall.
There's even a bit where they sit down on their skateboards and go down the ramp at a car park.
Yeah.
Now, I used to do that when I was a tiny child down the street in front of my parents' house. Sitting down on a skateboard is not gnarly.
I know, but it was just... Oh, it was a real treat. This was like the highlight of the film, I think, for me.
Just some really rocking music.
And then they like harass, they cause like a real disturbance in this shopping mall. And then the cops go back to the precinct that's run by Harris. And Harris is like, well, we got to go and catch these kids. And then they do this full on manhunt for David Spade and his mate. Catch them. They go to court. And then, like, Mahoney's like, oh, I know these guys because I'm Mahoney. Of course I know, like, this annoying little kid. And he, like, managed to save them from going to jail by saying they'll join Citizens on Patrol. This is a lot of setup for David Spade and his mate's characters. And after this, they do very little.
They really don't do much, do they?
Yeah, like, they're like an afterthought in the finale. Like, they kind of, like, them and House, like, become, like, the cool gang. And they don't do an awful lot. And it was just so much more set up than any character, I think, has ever had in any of these films.
I'm glad for it. That skating scene, the gnarly, gnarly, rockin' skating scene was just...
Yeah.
Oh, a thing to behold. And at that moment, the 90s were born.
Pretty much, yeah.
There's another new character played by another actor that people might recognise.
Oh, yeah, completely forgot.
A little actor named Sharon Stone.
Fucking hell, what is she doing in here?
She's got a reasonably large part in it. She is Gutenberg's love interest. She's there as a journalist to cover the amazing news story of the Citizens on Patrol project, and inexplicably kind of seems to be attracted to Gutenberg.
Yeah, but also at the same time, she keeps on showing up but doesn't do a lot. They were kind of like, well, we're going to put her in, but they haven't got a... She's just someone for like Gutenberg to kind of be smug around quite a lot. She plays in quite a lot in the finale of the film. But it's just like, wow, what is Sharon Stone doing in her? Like, her hair looks insane in some of these.
I read a fact. Apparently, she had just gotten divorced for the first time and decided that she wanted to accept a film role where she would just be hanging out with a bunch of comedians to, like, make her cheer up. That's why she did it.
She picked the wrong movie.
Yeah.
What have the rest of the gang been up to? So in this film, Gutenberg is just insufferable. He is phoning it in So like, he's not in it very much, and literally everything he does is just like a smug smile to camera.
I've decided that from now on, the unit of measurement for smugness is a goot.
Yeah.
Or like, so like how many goots on the gootometer?
He's got like 1,000, he's 1,000 on the gootometer in this. Like, he's not in it a lot, and you can kind of see that he is checking out of the franchise, like, big time. Winslow doesn't... It takes us, like, about halfway through the film until he actually has, like, a line that isn't him going...
Even the sound effects shit is kind of toned down.
Yeah, he does all the same stuff. Like, he... So, for the past two films, he's done his kung fu shtick. He does it twice in this film. I just, like... Get some new noises, mate.
If you're gonna insist on doing the noises thing...
He does a terrible Dracula impression.
Yeah.
Just for... Oh, that was bad. And then... Oh, who else... Bobcat Goldthwait, as Zed, is back.
Yeah, he gets a bit more of an arc, as we discussed before.
Yeah, so, like, one of the other citizens on patrol is this, like, young photographer?
She's called Laura. She seems... Well, I don't know if she's a full-time photographer. She has a camera. She also seems to be in charge of blowing up a lot of balloons.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of, like...
They bond.
They bond. They have a romance, which is quite nice. In this film, I understood so little of what Zed said, because Bobcat Goldthwait's Bobcat voice was just off the charts on this one.
Okay, like, I know, I would like to talk to you about what we're here for, and that's for me to pitch the new CLP program to you.
Even amid all of that incoherence, he tries to sing like a love song for his girlfriend on like a plugged-in electric guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Just in the middle of a forest. Like, I guess he's got...
They're by a lake or something.
He's got a generator with him and an amp, and he sings this like... bizarre rock love song for her.
Can you do the point now? I'm with you. I know the love of my heart. Some things stuck in my eyes. Your mother, my mother, she never looked as fine as Anderson. I wrote that for you.
Yeah, very peculiar. Oh, there is another incident with Winslow of this thing of just people not understanding how Michael Winslow works. Like, there's a bit where, like, they're doing, like, a workout. Callahan is doing a workout, and she's trying to get Hooks to put some music on the boombox.
Yeah.
And Hooks can't work the boombox, so, like, Winslow walks right past them and starts boomboxing, and, like, Callahan turns to Hooks and goes, "Great choice, Hooks." And, like, Winslow has just walked in front of her, like, basically beatboxing. He stood on the other side of her to the beatbox. Either people just... He's a wizard... In the world of this film, people don't understand direction of sound, or Michael Winslow is completely insane, because none of what he does, his character, makes a blind bit. Like, you would not let that person be a police officer, and everyone is just like, they're just going along with it because they know. Like, him and Tackleberry are both just like one bad day away from... wearing your face as a mask.
Yes. And I mean, in general, there's some weird stuff going on with the way they use Callahan's character in this film, because four movies deep, they finally insist on a really gratuitous
boob shot
of Callahan. So she's in the pool, she's trying to teach the citizens on patrol how to like save a drowning victim, and she goes, "Right, now come and save me," and then like the camera moves around and all her t-shirt's gone all see-through, but like you don't, the joke is still the same without that.
It could still just be like everyone just thinks she's really hot. But in this, they were kind of like, no, that won't fly. Like, four movies in, we've got to have some nipples. Yeah. Oh, well.
I'll tell you what was a really good scene that I did really enjoy.
Okay, yeah.
When Tackleberry is going to meet up with the old lady.
Oh, yeah.
She's, like, in this old folks' home, and there's this kind of, like, slightly sad scene where he's rocking up at, with Callahan, actually. Up at their old folks' home, and we can just hear, like, you know, they're, like... wheeling their creaky wheelchairs around and kind of shuffling along on walkers. Someone's just kind of idly playing a harmonica. And then when we finally come up to the guy that's playing the harmonica, he's playing it with his nose. That's it.
He's just like, she's down the hall. And just like
with
rubs
the harmonica
it across
on his nose. Brilliant. And I don't know. All
genuine
I can think,
laugh from me.
All I can think is that the guy, the extra that was on the set, to just and they were just like, can you do this thing with the harm? Just play the harmonica.
They just,
was, he's just like some massive lad from back in the day that like used to do, I don't know, vaudeville or something. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'll play you some harmonica with my nose. And they're like, give this guy a line.
Yeah. That was like, yeah, so that was a genuine laugh. Were there any other genuine laughs for you in this?
Oh, that's a good question.
I can give you one of mine.
Oh, please do.
Which I was, it's one of these things with this film where you're almost like shocked that you laugh at things. You're like, is that funny or am I just kind of like, am I just looking for whatever I can? And this is the bit where Proctor is just eating a hamburger at his desk. And some guy's like bending over and like doing something with the photocopier or something next to him. And like just like a jet of ketchup just shoots out the burger and sprays all over the guy's ass. Proctor tries to wipe it off and the guy just walks away. He's just got ketchup all over his bum.
That's the joke.
That is literally it. And it is, there is nothing else in that scene. It is literally just a little cut scene of just like this one like visual ketchup bum gag. And it tickled me. And then afterwards I was like, oh, I feel a little bit ashamed, but...
I don't blame you, buddy. Yeah. It was a funny scene. We get a few... What else do we get? We get quite a big set piece around Proctor again.
Oh, God, this goes on for fucking ever.
It's very long. It's very, very, very long. And he is using a portaloo. Sits down, you know, in the portaloo.
He's just been a dick to everybody.
He's always a dick. A fucking Proctor. The gang, they're near a construction site for some reason. They managed to talk one of the construction workers into just letting them use the crane, mm-hmm. as that would happen. You know, they're just up for a laugh, aren't they? They pick up the portaloo in the crane. Proctor has no idea because he's reading Archie comic books.
Yeah.
And then this is like the biggest crane in the world, I guess, with the longest reach because they're able to drop the portaloo down in the middle of a football stadium.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind they were picking it up on a construction site. Not the football stadium's already built. There's a game underway. They drop him down. The gang run along.
Yeah.
They somehow know exactly how to unclip the walls from the base bit of the portaloo. And then they lift up the lid. And then Proctor's there. He's caught with his pants down in the middle of the football stadium. Just as the national anthem starts to play, he has no choice but to stand. Tough break, brother.
Tough break. Even tougher gag. It's a difficult one to land, and I don't think anyone could have done it. This was not...
It was theirs to lose.
There was... Were there any other big set pieces in this?
There's quite a big set piece with your boy David Spade, actually, which have marked down as being a genuine franchise low point for me.
Oh, yeah, this was bad.
But with an interesting payoff. There's a bit of a sting in the tail. So what it essentially is Michael Winslow wants to scare David Spade and House straight because they think that being a policeman is just easy.
They think they're ready and they're like, we should just be vigilantes. And this is a bit where you go like, oh, David Spade's back, like, let's have a character arc, let's do something with House.
No.
They don't really.
Instead, Winslow like assigns them to like a fake assignment where they have to go to like some dark alley in the middle of the night. And then he does his fucking stupid gunshotty shtick and they act as if the police have just killed a guy, right?
Yeah.
And they've killed some guy who's in a body bag. And then Hightower walks out in handcuffs in like this weird disguise with like a kind of a Rastafarian wig and this big sort of...
Like a muumuu sort
of tropical dress thing. And these big shades, like they don't know it's Hightower.
Yeah, his supposed nephew doesn't recognise him. Yeah,
he knows lots of 8 foot tall men, obviously. It could be anyone, right? So he's supposedly this criminal, his brother's dead, and they're like, all right, David Spade and House, you guys ride in the back with the perp and the body. And then Hightower, he's doing this like voodoo impersonation thing where he's supposed to be like bringing his dead brother back to life.
Yeah.
It's not so good, guys.
It's not good in many ways. It is not so good.
It's very bad. And then the joke is that they're scaring David Spade in house because the guy in the body bag comes back to life. And this is the interesting thing in the tale.
Yeah.
Comes back to life, zips himself out of the body bag, and he's wearing a red Jason Voorhees mask, and he's got a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Long-time listeners that have heard season one of this will know that we have discussed there's this weird idea in the popular culture that Jason Voorhees has a chainsaw.
Chainsaw and an ice hockey mask go together as like a visual horror trope, but it doesn't actually... I think like the closest in those films is that he has like a weed whacker.
Yeah, they should have given him a weed whacker.
He never has a full-on chainsaw.
Yeah. Turns out it was just Tackleberry under the mask.
Yeah. And then they should have had him just be like, hey, so when do we do something scary?
Yeah. Yes. Either that or have him get carried away and actually murder them.
Yeah.
And then his mates have to decide whether or not to like turn him in or help him cover it up.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it will probably explain the fact that David Spade, I can't imagine, is going to be in the next one. So they could have just covered it
up. True.
He had nothing. He was young. He had nothing to do. He was just a skate punk. He was never going to go anywhere. And so, like, then the film, like with all Police Academy films, it kind of wanders around comfortably for, like, about an hour, just doing some bits, just having a skit here, a skit there, and then they suddenly go, let's have some stakes, a chase scene, and no jokes. So
this kicks off, what sort of sets this in motion is the scene in
London
at the International Police Conference, where we get treated to a little visit from Nogata, the Japanese student from the previous film.
Yes.
Who had a bit of a tryst with Callahan.
Yep.
And when we sort of see him, he's sat at dinner with Lassard, who's just finishing up a story he's been telling, which includes the lines, and so I asked her, do you always work under podiums?
Ho-ho! It's the blowy gag!
Sweet callback to that one time he got a beach!
Yep, nice. And he's hanging out with a load of other, like, commandants. And then is it, like, whoever it is, like the head commissioner who always shows up in these films comes and is like, great news, Lassard. Everyone is loving your COP program. We're going to invite all these international cop guys over to Nowhere Town, Toronto, USA to like go and like to show off what it can do. And like Lassard looks all starry eyed and a little bit bewildered and is like, oh, this is absolutely wonderful. Off to America, everybody.
Let's go in the car now.
And they all get up to leave. And the thing that actually, this is another thing that like, kind of tickled me a bit, is that all the international commandants all are carrying goldfish bowls, like Lassard. Like it's like a thing that they all do.
Nice.
So they go over. So now the pressure is on. And unbeknownst to Lassard, Harris has discontinued the COP program, because I think that they bungled an operation. Oh yes, the angry lady, the old lady with the guns, that Tackleberry is totally cheating on his wife with, blows a sting operation, like an undercover job. And so Harris is like, you've blown like a year's worth of police work, like this is not happening. So like, oh no, Lassard is going to be so embarrassed in front of all the people. And then there's a prison break.
Yeah, because Proctor gets fooled by a bunch of crims who are locked up, including a gang of ninjas. They actually use the words "a gang of ninjas."
No shit, a gang of ninjas.
And when he turns up, they're playing a game of Simon Says, and they're doing like Simon Says, touch your toes. Simon Says, clap your hands. And Proctor's like, "Oh, this looks fun, and I'm a child trapped in a man's body. Can I play?" And they're like, "Yeah." So Simon Says, take two steps backwards. Simon Says, take two steps to the left. Simon Says, put your hands in front of you. And all of it is a ploy so that one of the guys in the cell can reach around and get his gun. And they're like, "So put your hands up." And he's like, "Oh, you didn't say Simon Says."
And then they all break out and basically imprison a load of the police in the jail. And then you've got a full-on prison break. And so then the Police Academy gang and the COP guys need to go and save the day. Like, the whole impetus for this thing is so fucking... I was kind of drifting off a little bit at this point. I wasn't really paying attention. I was like, what the fuck? Was it Simon Says and there's ninjas and now there's...
Yeah, so they have a fight with the ninjas on a like a pirate ship. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then, no shit, I wish I could tell you more than this. My notes, I've got my notebook in my hand. The next bit says, something about aeroplanes and hot air balloons, I don't fucking know.
Yeah, there's like a 10-minute hot air balloon slash biplane chase.
Where they're trying to get the... bad guy, they're trying to catch the escaped convicts.
Yeah, Sharon Stone in the third act, her character, like you discover, can like fly planes, so she suddenly has something to actually do. Mahoney's still there, he hasn't been on screen for about 20 minutes because he's just like kind of checked out. The COP people do fucking nothing. Like they do, like, it's like the whole point of this film, like, that is meant to be Citizens on Patrol, and they do so very little. Basically, David Spade and House save Harrison Proctor from going over Niagara Falls in a basket. Fucking hell. And like, that, this is the point. It's like,
what an original idea.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then like even, so Hooks does a few little bits and bobs. She doesn't even get to deliver her freeze the bag line.
Hooks is massively underused in this.
Tackleberry jumps out of a plane.
I don't think that Hightower is even really in this finale. Does he really even get to do very much?
And like, I mean, they probably can't get him in one of those little planes.
That's true. It's like the jet ski thing from the last one.
Totally. And
it just goes on for too long with like no gags.
Yeah, and like the denouement of the piece is that Tackleberry like jumps out of a plane, lands on top of the hot air balloon that has the baddies in. It's like, quick, get them. They're escaping in an incredibly slow-moving hot air balloon.
Yeah.
And then he like slides down the hot air balloon and somehow manages to end up in the basket, which is a physical impossibility.
Yeah, I really like the how badly the scenes sync up, which are obviously filmed like with planes and stunt doubles in planes, and then the shots that are obviously the cast like completely static on the ground in a studio, pretending that like they're up, like really high up in the air, just shouting at each other. It really doesn't match up very well, but I kind of like it.
It's and then some enjoyable bullshit.
They save the day. And Lassard is kind of like, oh, well, this is all wonderful. And everyone loves the COP. Like, they think we've done a bang-up job here.
And as always, inexplicably, even though he's done fucking nothing, everybody is just losing their shit over Mahoney. They're like, well done, and we owe it all to Mahoney. Thank you, Mahoney. Where is Mahoney? And they turn around and he's in another hot air balloon with fucking Sharon Stone. They're drinking champagne. They throw out the baskets. They fly off into the air, throw their champagne glasses away. At which point, that is Mahoney fucking checking out of the franchise. Yeah, no more Gutenberg.
He's literally escaping the franchise while the film is still rolling.
He sails off into the sunset with a bottle of champagne and Sharon Stone.
Yeah.
To be like, I'm above you now. I've outgrown you.
I'm going to... Stay tuned for Three Men and a Baby coming out next year.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then the credits roll, which includes, not big early on, very small in the middle of it. I just happen to spot one of the credits is production associate S. Gutenberg.
Hmm.
Why not a bigger credit? Why not use his proper first name?
Maybe it was just...
a relative of his? I don't know.
Or maybe not even related and like he's like, hey... There was another Steve Gutenberg, no relation, and he is like, you are S. Gutenberg on my fucking set.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, don't upset Mr. Gutenberg. He's a horrible man deep down.
We've got a feeling he's already 1 foot out of the franchise.
Yeah.
We need to cling on to him. We're hoping that he's going to come back when we tell him the next one's in Miami.
Yeah. And so then that... Well, we haven't told him that we're actually going to be filming it in Toronto again. and then, then that's it. The credits roll over the sound of Citizens on Patrol.
They're Citizens on Patrol! Citizens on Patrol!
And And then after that, as if like the film kind of like maybe wasn't kind of made you feel sad enough, we also get this song by Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys fame, like a mid-80s Brian Wilson song when he was still like really heavily under the influence of that evil psychiatrist slash like manager that he had. Was it Eugene Landy?
I believe played by Paul Giamatti in the movie, right?
Yes. Yeah. Good movie. I enjoyed that. And the song is called Let's Drive to Heaven in My Car, and it is garbage. Let's go to heaven in my car. I want to drive you there tonight. Let's go to heaven in my car.
It was nominated for a Worst Song of the Year award, I believe, but it lost to I Want Your Sex from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, dear. I'm glad he kind of got his life a little bit more on track, because that was just a little... It was a sad bookend to this film.
Let's go to heaven in my car.
That is the film.
That's the bloody film, guys.
It's not that... I mean, it's not...
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. I'm not going to say it's like, oh, it's a great film, but like, I think it was definitely more enjoyable than 2 and 3.
Yeah, absolutely. 2 and 3 were a lot of water treading, a lot of establishing tropes. We've got those tropes established, like I said earlier. We've got the shorthand. I get the jokes now. Like, we get who all the characters are meant to be because they're so thinly drawn. Like, if you add up, for example, oh, I don't know, let's just pick Hightower. Like, how much screen time has Hightower actually had over these four movies?
15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Probably.
Tops. So that is such a small amount of time to, like, get to know what we're supposed to expect about this character and to be like, oh, we know what he's going to do next because we know what he's like, don't we?
Yeah.
Like, in the first film, you just don't know what anybody's fucking like because there's so many characters, there's barely in it. And then every film introduces more characters.
Spackler wasn't in this. Or Fackler,
no,
whatever the fuck his name.
Spackler, Fackler. Apparently the actor had a disagreement about how much he should be paid.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Thought he was big money, that guy.
Oh, he's big money. Wow. I wonder if he'll come back, which would be... Yeah, because obviously we know that the cast is going to thin out a bit. And we're gonna lose Bobcat at some point as well, who's like, I guess, I would say he went on to bigger and better things, but fuck knows what else Bobcat Goldthwait's been.
He's in Scrooged, the Bill Murray film.
Oh, yeah.
I love that film.
Oh, yeah, I like him in Scrooged. Yeah, yeah. So what's the next one? Oh,
Assignment Miami Beach. Now,
this is what we've been waiting
pumped.
For.
This franchise's equivalent of Jason Takes Manhattan. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Does that mean that Mission to Moscow is Jason X?
Yeah, absolutely. So I haven't seen it, don't know much about it. Very excited. I think it's going to be hot garbage.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Like, baked in the sun. I am interested if there will be... I just need to know if there's going to be, like, a Blue Oyster gag in it, because we're 4 for 4. And I just can't imagine that they would just let something as trivial as being in a completely different city get rid of this long-standing, terrible gag.
Especially as we know that they're almost certainly going to film it in fucking Ontario, and like Toronto,
yeah.
Ontario.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So they've got the set there.
Yeah, of course. I'm hoping that like it's going to be like meant to be set in Miami, but there's going to be only 2 exterior shots. Like, they were like, we flew out and we did shooting for like a weekend. Everything else was set inside.
Yeah, and like that shooting's not with any of the actors. It's just establishing shots.
Yeah, it's just like the director is like, fuck you, I'm putting this on expenses. I'll shoot some stuff around it. So, yeah, looking forward to that. It's going to be ugly.
So, Tom, this now means, now that we've completed the fourth film, we are just over halfway through the 7-movie franchise.
Yeah.
How are you feeling? What are your thoughts on it so far?
It's been nice to do something different, to like not do action or like horror. It hasn't been as bad as I thought, maybe. Well, I mean, it's like, there's been 2 fun ones and 2 kind of draggy ones.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, I don't know whether that ratio might get fucked with the next few films.
Yeah, I'm not expecting the jokes to improve drastically anytime soon, yeah. But I feel like we might start having more fun when the quality gets worse.
I mean, I'm interested to see what they're going to do without Goots, like how, like who becomes, because he doesn't so much have a thing, they've all got like their wacky thing, whereas he is just the leading man. He is just like, he is the linchpin of the whole thing, for better or worse, that he is kind of your everyman.
Yeah.
So I don't know who is going to replace him, because all the other ones are fucking psychopaths, basically.
They're definitely going to have to introduce a new everyman character who's going to be like lowest. His Goots level is going to be a lot lower. He's going to be like, you know, only sort of 650 Goots as opposed to 1,000. But like, you know, he's going to have been a lot cheaper.
Do you think it could be like maybe like Tackleberry's brother-in-law or someone like that?
I think it's going to be someone in Miami. I think they're going to get sent to Miami Beach. There's going to be like a wacky beach cop who's like a bit of a beach bum, you know, just like chilling out.
He's going to be the new Goots.
Doesn't like the fact he's going to have to do some actual work, going to be wisecracking, and they're going to bond so much that he's going to end up going back with them.
Okay.
That's my guess. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I like that. I like that as a theory. And how are you feeling about this series
I mean, I'm feeling all right. It took a little while to get into the headspace because as we all know, comedy doesn't age particularly well always, unless it's of a very specific type of comedy.
That is, it's weird, this whole thing, because you think that something that should be funny will just stay funny.
It's so societal. But so when we watched the first one, it was quite a shock, I think, for just like, whoa, this is what people thought was like an acceptable gag back in the day.
But most, that was the one of the funnier ones of the bunch.
It was. But I also think that you and me have been meeting once a week to watch these. We're doing it in quite close succession. So I feel like we've managed to align our brains with the mid-80s way of thinking now. It's like, it's less of a shock when they do these weird racial gags. I still don't like it, but
It's not such a shock to the system because we've seen it three times already by this point.
Yeah, so I'm a bit more numb to it. And I wonder if that's just what being in the 80s was like.
Yeah, maybe. It's
Weird.
It's weird.
What I'm saying is, like, now from here on out, these movies are going to start moving more into the 90s even.
I guess, yeah.
And I'm wondering if they're going to have to fucking modernize.
I don't know. I don't know if you can modernize Police Academy.
Well, it's like your racist old granddad who's just like, oh, he's, you know,
set in his ways.
He's too old to change.
He doesn't mean anything by it.
It's just the way he was raised.
Yeah. Well,
from a different era.
Tune in next time where we'd see like if that is the case when we go and soak up some Miami sun.
Let's go to Miami.